I'd like to have my guests introduce themselves. Can you share a bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Nelly. I'm a product designer at Pitch, and Pitch is a software for presentations. So you can create beautiful presentations with it. And yeah, thanks a lot, Zach, for having me today. And we met also through Pitch, as Zach is a passionate user of our tool. So yeah, happy to be here.
I focus on presentation design. So as a presentation tool that is modern and not one of the traditional owned by the three major company ones, it's really been a great product for me. Before we get too deep into the work stuff, though, can you talk a little bit about yourself? Where are you from? Where you live? What do you like to do for fun?
I come from Bulgaria, and I've been living in Berlin for the last 10 years or so. I came to Berlin to study, and I went through a communications design course at uni. And this was definitely a very impactful experience for me, and was my creative journey, as it taught me a lot about critical thinking, and it just introduced me to speculative design and digital design in general. And it was very much encouraged that we think more deeply about our relationship to technology. And we were creating some installations and pieces that were thought-provoking in that sense. So this is how I got started with digital design. And then moving onwards after uni, I got into the UI UX field and product design. So I ended up working at some design agency and also later on joining Pitch as a product designer. Apart from work, I've been getting a lot into more creative hobbies on the side and just trying to find that creative fulfillment beyond just our regular jobs. So I've been getting more into ceramics and illustration as well. So this has been really great to spend some time working with my hands, not on the screens.
I think I probably mentioned on the podcast before, like, I think it's crucial that us as like creative people have these creative outlets that are just not moving things on the screen in the same way that we do for work. The way that you said it, it sounded like you took communication design after focusing on something else. Did you have an original like degree program that you were in that you then changed?
So I actually started with communications design and then got the chance to choose the projects we want to work on. And the course was really broad. So in my case, I just got really interested into digital design and ended up choosing all projects in that area, whereas other people in my course even went down more traditional design paths, such as editorial design or typography, photography. So yeah, it was definitely very open and broad, and we could more or less do the thing we want out of it.
And you mentioned design agencies before working at Pitch. I'm curious, I think like at least a couple years ago, there was a lot of conversations about like the difference and the pros and cons of working in-house or design agency. And I think everyone has preferences here too, but curious what your experience is in comparing the two.
Yeah, that's a great question. From my experience, working at a design agency always had the promise of more variation in the projects that you work on and being able to swiftly change your focus from one project to another, maybe even end up doing completely different types of tasks as a designer as well. And I think this has always been the enticing thing about working at an agency. But I feel like in the last years, design agencies have been moving more and more closer to the way also product design and in-house teams work, and that they have been becoming more integrated within different companies. This was also my experience when I was working at a design agency before. So I feel like some of these differences have started to dissolve throughout time. And I feel like for myself, working at an in-house team as a product designer, it gave me the huge benefit of having a team and also developing this relationship with the people you work with and becoming this level of trust that I feel like is always in a way lacking, even in the best types of relationships between an agency and their client.
I'd love to hear more about Pitch too. How long have you been there? What does your team look like? What's your role? And what's sort of the day-to-day look like for you?
So I've been working at Pitch for a little over 3 years now. And I started there as a product designer, and I've been working on different teams ever since I started. And usually the way we work is that we have multiple product teams, which are all interdisciplinary teams. You have a designer, a product manager, and engineers on the team, and you end up working most closely with these people. But you still have a lot of opportunities to collaborate with others as well. Oftentimes, the projects end up being related to each other. And we also try to foster a strong design culture in the company, where we would hold company-wide design reviews, where you would be able to share your work as a product designer, get feedback from anyone, and also give feedback to anyone as well. So I think this is one of the great things we have going on in the way we do design at Pitch. And in my journey there, I've also went through a phase where I used to be a team lead of a team, and I got to learn a lot about product management as well. So I had this very mixed double role between being a product designer and a product manager for a team. And this ended up being a very insightful experience for me. And I also enjoyed a lot of it as well. But it was also quite tough sometimes to juggle two roles at the same time.
Yeah, if you don't mind me asking, why did that change?
So I used to be the team lead of a team that ended up being just changed in its setup. And we also stopped having team leads on every single team, but we switched to the setup in which we would have a product manager on a team. So our tasks and our ownership over the product side of things, it got a little bit shifted towards having someone who is a dedicated product manager working closely with a designer instead of having this more or less undefined team lead role, which could be anything. It could also be an engineer who would take over this role, or it could be a designer. Yes.
Gotcha. Well, it's really interesting because I think getting the opportunity to be a design lead is, I don't know, maybe increasingly rare it feels. And I think it's such a unique experience as well, because like you said, it kind of does feel like multiple jobs because you were still designing at the same time, right?
Very small correction. It was a team lead. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, being a team lead, it's also something that includes so many different tasks. It includes taking care of the team, feeling like a team and not just a group of people, and making sure that there are rituals that get everyone working more closely and more smoothly together. But also it included things like thinking about prioritization and what are we going to work on next. And then on the side, of course, there's also all the things that you would do as a designer as well. So it was definitely a very varied role with a lot of different responsibilities in it.
Yeah, it really sounds like it. And I would say, like, since we're talking about it now, I'm curious if there's any major takeaways for you from your time as a team lead. Like, is there advice you would give other leaders of product designers?
I think one of the main things that I took away from this time was the importance of understanding product better, and that it's something that you can apply to your work, not only as a product manager or a team lead, but also as a designer and an engineer as well. Literally in every single different role that you can have in a company, I feel like you can really benefit from understanding how this process works a little better, and also just feeling empowered as well to take part in it, whichever your job title is at the end, because I feel like we're all really involved in the way that we're building the product in all our respective roles. And I think another learning that I got from myself was not trying to do everything at the same time and not put yourself under so much pressure of being a great, whatever you're doing. If you're doing multiple things at once, it's really hard to feel like you're doing a great job at all of the things you're doing. So I learned to try to focus at one thing at a time, rather than trying to do the best that I can in all of the different functions that I was trying to cover.
Such a crucial lesson. I seem to relearn it over and over again. So I think we have a pretty unique opportunity because Pitch 2.0 just came out, and with a product refresh or redesign, whatever makes the most sense to call it, I would love to hear more about what that project was like. How long did that take? How'd that go for you? Because I think the result is great. There's definitely a lot of changes. So I imagine that there was a ton of work that went on behind the scenes here.
Yeah, it was definitely a great project to be a part of. So our UI refresh or redesign, it all started 3 months ago. And the moment that we got to work on this project, we were at a time where we had already spent a little bit of time thinking about our design quality and trying to improve the general state of the UI of the app and resolve design debt that has been collected for years and years of just shipping a lot of features in a very fast pace and just building up a lot of different places where we felt like some polish was missing or some consistency was missing. And I feel like this is something that anyone can relate to when they're working on a product for a longer period of time. You always have places like that, which you wish you could improve. And we got the chance of doing that in this project, in which we set ourselves the goal to really simplify and modernize the way that the app feels like. And we managed to do this by setting ourselves some pretty clear goals and try to avoid the trap of redesigning everything and anything all at once, which I know many people have had the experience with, that it can be a really frustrating type of project where it feels like it's never going to end and you don't really have a goal inside, as it feels so overwhelming and huge. So we really try to be focused about what we want to achieve and mostly focus on the way things feel and look like, and be very mindful of that and try to avoid changing too much of how the product actually works within this project.
You said design debt really early on, and I think we talk about tech debt a lot, and I think I hear like my developer friends talk about tech debt, but I don't hear about design debt as often. Can you talk a little bit more about like what that looks like and how to sort of recover from that?
Yeah, design debt, it's a very curious and very, I would say, emotional topic as well. So the way I think about design debt is similar to how tech debt works, where you would have a cost to the velocity of the way you build things in having some inefficiencies of the way that you build a feature, or maybe having some redundancy or some lack of consistency. I feel like it's very similar what we sometimes end up having in design as well, where you might have different layers of different phases of the way you wanted to design the product, all living at the same time all at once, as you were maybe improving the design of the way you built the product while you were building it. So you end up having so many different ways that maybe it could be a button or a modal or any type of component looks like. And these things just usually build up over time. And in our case, I could also sense that there was a level of frustration with the way that our design system would work and the tools that we had at on our disposal to design the product. So this was something that I feel like is quite common when you're working on a product for a longer period of time, and you would end up having these areas that lack some of the polish and the craft that you would love to give them, but you didn't have the chance maybe in the projects that you were working on. So we created a self-initiated project, which was called Design Quality. And it was what happened before we ended up working on the UI refresh. So it was something that really helped us try to tackle these areas one by one and do some small improvements on the side. It was literally our side project while we were working on other projects. And it was something that really helped us have a better foundation before embarking on a big refresh project. So I think this is something I would also recommend if you feel like this is something that you're experiencing as well in the product that you're working on. maybe consider trying to do this on the side and really work on these little rough edges one at a time with a group of other people who feel passionate about design quality and craft.
Yeah, that sounds really productive because honestly, I think like the alternative is doing a ton of work that might then get changed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm wondering how that process works because I think like the longer I've been a designer, the more I realize there is kind of that line between there's the objective, this is well designed, it's accessible, it meets the needs of our customers and our company and, you know, all the other qualifications. And then there's the subjective where people have opinions on what they think looks nice and what they like their colors to be and the stroke weight to be and all of those things. How do you make those decisions? How is the style set across so many different designers? And then probably, I'm assuming, people that are non-designers as well were part of this process. How are these decisions made and how do you sort of align on one direction as a group?
Yeah, that's tough. Definitely, it's something that can happen, having too many cooks at the kitchen all at once. In our case, we started our UI redesign project in a very collaborative way in which we try to hone in this energy and excitement that we had across different teams and all across the company. We're finally going to do something new. So we try to give everyone a chance to share their ideas and share some sketches, as well as just feel enabled to talk about it and share what they think. And then we collected all of that and focused it. So I feel like it was key that we had a dedicated team. I worked together with my colleague, Jordan Amblin, who is a fantastic visual designer. And we managed to cook down all of the different inputs that we had from everyone else, as well as had some workshops together with our brand design team and try to understand what are some ways in which we can align the way the product feels like with what we stand for as a brand. And we managed to combine all of these different inputs into one thing. But it was definitely a process and it didn't happen all at once. But I feel like what was really helpful to us was try to come back to these values that we talked about together with our brand design team and try to translate them into something visual. So if we would say we want to be an approachable product and we want to enable anyone to create beautiful design in their presentations, what does this mean in a visual sense? And we had some exercises like that that really helped us turn these vague ideas into something more tangible and then translate it into the way we tackled the redesign as well.
Nice. I like the values-driven approach. I think that's probably the right strategy for everybody. You said modernization when you started talking about the refresh, and I'm curious how you look at that because Pitch is only a couple years old, right? So to modernize it means that either things are moving really quickly in like trends or like the broader technology or the product development of Pitch itself. Like, can you talk a little bit about like the velocity of which things are changing and sort of what led the decision to be like, okay, we really need to just like kind of do an overhaul of everything?
Yeah, I feel like in the last couple of years, we've seen so many different design trends come in and out and the way that products feel and look like that we interact with every day has changed so much in these last couple of years. So I think we all had the feeling that we were trying to ship and deliver value to our users in a very efficient way, but also we wanted to keep up with the way we want to present our tool and also the way we want it to feel like and be included in your daily tech stack that you would interact with. And I think at some point we felt like the velocity that we had to ship value, it made it hard for us to also innovate on the visual side of things. So we ended up focusing more on shipping new features over being able to spend some time on refining our look and feel. And I think for anyone working at a startup, I'm sure you can relate with this desire to be really fast and try to keep up and focus on the value. And sometimes things like craft and design quality are things that are a little bit left behind. And you just try to always integrate it in the projects that you work on. But it's not always that easy, as sometimes scope needs to be more focused. And I feel like for us, it was very important to work closely with the engineers and figure out how we can solve this in very pragmatic ways together, over spending a lot of time on a very visionary type of redesign, which ends up being a real pain to implement. So I think this is what really helped us do this as a part of our 2.0 release.
Speaking of focus, I'm very curious. I think like the audience that you have to design for is super unique. So like I always talk about how presentation tools are often the only visual expression tool on non-designers' computers, right? They've got their computer and they can make slides, and that's like how they express themselves visually. And then I think there's like the other side of this where you've got like designers, and like the designers that make Figma or Adobe tools or a video editing tool, you know, they're designing for other designers, which is itself its own challenges. But you've got this unique thing where you're like designing for designers and non-designers and sort of every kind of level of ability, and people that care about those little tiny details and people that are just looking for like the quickest way to do something. Like, I think that's such a unique, challenging sort of field that you're in. Like, how do you find the right balance for your audience, and how do you design specifically for everybody?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the most exciting and also difficult things of working on a product such as ours. I feel like this is something that we always end up discussing and keeping in mind whichever feature we're working on, is to strike that balance between enabling people who don't have the design background to create something without feeling overwhelmed, but then also not be a blocker to someone who wants to go further with what they're creating and feel at home at Pitch as well as in the other design tools they would use in their daily life. So I feel like this is a really interesting challenge for us. And sometimes we end up trying to make some tough decisions of, is this feature going to be more or less used or useful to this or that type of person? And it's something really difficult to try to design for everyone all at once. So some of the features really end up being more or less tailored towards a more general use case or a more specialist use case.
I literally can't imagine. And it's funny because like I come to Pitch as someone with a very specialized use case. And I'm always like, oh, it would be so great to have this, but I very much understand I'd be the only person using it or one of few sort of thing. So yeah, what a good challenge that you have. Are there any lessons from Pitch 2.0 that you will be bringing with you for the eventual Pitch 3.0?
Yeah, everyone knows after a redesign, soon comes the next one.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the main lessons was the importance of working so closely with engineers and really trying to understand how design is being implemented and do the final touches of a design, not in Figma, but in code together. I think this has been the most impactful thing for me after being able to work on this project and just having such a great time working with our team and having this feeling of being so aligned, which I hadn't really had before in previous projects. And I think this is largely to the fact that we were collaborating so much directly into what they were working on. So for example, we would create a sketch of what we want to achieve in Figma, and we would try to break tasks down, but we would try to avoid having a very detailed handoff, but we would rather start testing what an engineer would start building, and we would refine it as we go through leaving comments on GitHub and basically avoid having to have Figma as the only source of truth, which we all know will never be, as it's really hard to define everything down to the pixel in a way that is helpful and useful to the engineers.
I'm curious if you like, if you're editing code yourself and like what that experience is like and how much of a background in coding do you have?
I don't have much of a background in this regard, but Jordan, the other designer I work with, is one of these special unicorns who can do it all. And it was very inspiring to me to learn from him and also just observe how engineers would work as well. So I tried to work with them through leaving some comments and reviewing things in detail, and also sometimes just sitting together, as we also had the benefit of sometimes working from the same office. So basically reviewing things while sitting on the same desk and making sure that we mean the same thing when we are looking at a design, looking at a piece of UI. And after having this opportunity, I felt like I would want to learn more about it and feel more enabled to understand how front-end actually works and how our designs are being implemented at the end.
I didn't mean to bring up the decade-old question of should designers code, but I just found it interesting. What about presentation making? Just because it's something that I'm obviously super passionate about. Do you make a lot of decks, and like, what are your favorite kinds of presentations to make? Is that part of the culture of pitch internally?
Yeah, we end up creating a lot of presentations. I feel like we have quite a special use case, as we're using our own product, and we always end up finding things while we're using it, things we want to improve, and maybe an odd bug here and there. And I think one of the main ways that we would use it is for internal knowledge sharing. For example, on these design reviews that I mentioned, we would always create a presentation in which we would drop in all of the most recent designs and anything you would want to have feedback on and anyone's eyes on. And we would use it as our basis to run the review with. And we do this a lot on various projects as basically a knowledge sharing tool. And we end up finding a lot of different areas of how you can use pitch or how you can use presentations to communicate ideas more clearly, as you're forced to be more mindful of the amount of text you're sharing. For example, if you're going to use it in a sync type of way, or also thinking about more interesting ways in which you can visualize what's happening on your slides. Now that we included some more advanced animation features, you can really mull your story in a more easy way and grab people's attention also when you're presenting in a more traditional way. So it's been always really interesting to try to use our tool whenever we need to share something and see what are the limits to what we have and what are things we want to improve.
I'm very grateful for the new advanced animation capabilities. So thank you.
Fantastic.
Less pitch specific, but just curious, what'd be your advice for somebody that wanted to become a product designer, that either wanted to transition from another area of design or wanted to get into it from maybe no background in it?
I think an important thing is having a curious mindset and not be afraid to just try things out. It's really hard to know when you're starting out what is your thing going to be. And sometimes it ends up being multiple things that you're interested in and that you really want to try out and learn about. And I think it's really helpful when you try not to put yourself into a box of being only a designer or only an engineer. I think it's great when you are able to explore these different interests you have and just try things out, not be too afraid of breaking something, and also maybe asking someone to help out to learn something together with them. And just seeing where this leads you, I think, is something that's always been helpful for me. And try to avoid having this single job title that is easily defined and rather looking for things that feel interesting to you and see what you can learn?
You know, I usually ask a question about like the disadvantages and the problems that we find in our creative communities. But before I ask that, I'm curious where you find community, because I think like when I wrote this question 3 or 4 years ago, there was design Twitter and there was like a significant amount of design community happening there, which just doesn't exist anymore. And I think everybody's still trying to find their place. And plus, I think the pandemic really affected our in-person communities in a lot of different ways, but especially just like the design meetups and other events like that. I'm first curious, like where you find creative community yourself. And then we can talk about like the problems that we're finding there, too, if you'd like.
Yeah, I really feel this, too. I think that it's really changed over the last couple of years how we meet up and share ideas and find other people doing similar things as we do. And for me, it's been also trying to rediscover in-person meetups. I've been to a couple of them and it's very weird for sure after being away from this type of in-person events during COVID. Coming back feels a little bit awkward for everyone, I think. But I think there's still a lot of merit in trying to create these spaces to hang out with people without having a strict agenda and just find a lot of understanding sometimes for the things that you're dealing with other people who might be doing a similar thing. And I agree on your point about design Twitter being just a weird place sometimes, not really existing in the same form as it was before. And I feel like sometimes it can feel like everyone else is maybe working on a very exciting project and you're not doing that. And I think this type of communities where it's all focused around sharing the most striking visuals and trying to get a lot of engagement and optimizing a lot for that can sometimes feel really demotivating or making you very anxious of trying to live up to the way other people might present their work. So while I understand that it brings also a lot of benefits of being able to talk to a lot of people from all of these different companies and places, I think as well that it has its downsides of creating this sense of pressure sometimes of how you present your work and what you can talk about as well.
Oh, yeah. I find that like what you can talk about is really one of the most challenging ones. I think like classically, everyone always talked about like, oh, Apple employees can't talk about their work sort of thing. But really feel like everybody is like, it's working on something really exciting, but never be able to tell anybody. And I feel like that's really increasing. Do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, I think sometimes the projects you end up working on aren't things that are also readily understandable from just a single screenshot or something you can share. And yeah, I think it's also oftentimes quite of an awkward position to know like, oh, I could talk about this project, but in which detail, in which way, how much can I share? How much do I want to share? And it's just such a weird sense of feeling like you should be sharing something, but not very easily done. So I feel that, yes.
Something you were talking about with people just showing like their most exciting projects or these really like well-polished sort of mocks and stuff like that is there's this Instagramification of things where people are only like selecting the highlights and showing those. And then there's also like the toxic positivity of like, I've got the most amazing job and I'm working on the best thing ever. Between that and then like the other problems in our field, I think it's still at times a not very diverse field. Like how do we move forward from all of these things?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this as well. I feel like one of the ways in which to avoid this very boxed in way of sharing your work and talking about your work is rediscovering the joys of having a personal blog. This is something that I've been really admiring seeing the comeback of, and I am a very passionate user of RSS feeds and these very old forms of sharing things on the internet. I feel like there is a rediscovered excitement about and people feeling like they can create their own little corner on the internet, just talking about things that they're interested in and not having to follow whatever the algorithm is optimizing for, but basically opting out of this. And I really love to see this happening. And I think it's just bringing back some of the excitement of creating things for the internet beyond these platforms that we end up using so much. And the diverse topic, I think that it's important to be mindful of what type of teams are you working at and maybe what kind of bias is existing in this round within yourself and also within your whole team, and just trying to address that as well. And I think this is something that is also coming up now even more so now that we're all tackling and grappling with the topic of generative AI and its own unique biases that it's bringing into the way that we work and we create. And I think it's really important to be mindful of that and what this is going to bring as an unexpected factor in the way that we are working and putting things into the world as well.
I hadn't even thought to ask you about AI, but we got to talk about it, because I think that I have a lot of mixed feelings about it, because there's so many like of these baked in biases, like you were saying. But Pitch now has an AI feature as well. I'm curious both like your perspective on AI in general, if you'd like to expand on that anymore. And then like, what is it like to build that into your product? Were you involved with that side of the product launch and all of that?
Yeah, it's an exciting time for sure. And on our side of things, we were working on this project in parallel to the UI redesign. So it was a different team working on that. And it was very interesting to see the ways in which they would try to avoid recreating the same things that already exist and really try to find a use case that has potential of delivering something useful to people to get started with over trying to create something that wants to be perfect and a final form, as the way that you sketch down your ideas and your thoughts is always going to be different from one person to another. And sometimes it's easier if you have something to start with over just a blank piece of paper or a blank slide. I think this is the ethos that they had when they were approaching this, was trying to overcome this initial block of starting and not trying to create perfection or remove the creative aspect of you creating your own work. And I feel like this time that we're living in right now, it's something that is really exciting, but also very daunting to work with. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately and spending some time reading up more on the way AI is being created and trained and what are actually the costs of that, not only in a financial way, but more so in social and also planetary way. I can really recommend reading Atlas of AI by Kit Crawford. I can really recommend reading this book if you want to learn more about the way AI is being trained and also the cost that it has for our environment and for our society and the people who need to train it as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Just to go back to the pitch's use of AI, I think like you pointed out like how I kind of feel about it right now is like it helps as a starting place. So it's a new type of template. And that's how I'm, as a designer, like seeing a lot of these AI tools. And I think that's really helpful. But like you're sort of alluding to it, the bigger picture, like things are changing really fast. And like, I don't really know how I feel about like where it's all going. I'm going to read this book. It looks really good.
Awesome.
you mentioned RSS readers before we got into the AI topic, and it's something I really have been wanting to get into, as you know, we talked about Twitter changing so rapidly. What RSS reader are you using, and do you recommend
it? Yeah, I'm using Feedly, and it's really good if you just want to collect anytime types of blogs or websites that you want to keep up with. And I think you can also just create as many folders as you like, so you can organize things in whichever way makes sense to you. And I use it in the most basic way, but I'm sure there are more advanced ways of tailoring what you see and how much you want to see from each and every source that you connect with. But what I really enjoy about it is that it just has the things that you put in it, and that's it. There is no recommended content and things you don't know where they're coming from and why are you seeing them. It's only the things that you're just connected to it. And as often as people post, this is as often as how you would get posts in there as well. So there is no optimization of your feed, at least in the way that I use it. And this is really refreshing to me.
That sounds great. Thank you for the recommendation. I'm going to check that out right after this. And speaking of recommendations, is there one person that you think that our listeners should know about?
I've been really interested in the topic of what are some alternatives to this design agency versus in-house model that we talked about in the beginning. And a couple of friends of mine started a design and tech cooperative a couple of months or even a year ago. And they're called Village One, and they're trying to explore this way of designing and building tech products in a way in which there is no single owner of a company, but rather everyone is sharing the ownership over the company and the way that you work. And I think this is a really interesting concept and something we don't see as often. So I would really recommend getting into the topic of design and tech cooperatives and see what alternatives are out there.
That sounds really interesting. I'm excited to check this out as well. As a creative agency owner, it's hard out here, especially this year has been difficult, I think, across the industry. And I'm always looking for alternatives, as you know, keeping things evolving is usually kind of the way to go, and not just like, be like, yeah, it'll just be better next year. So I'm going to look into this more. It seems really interesting. Aside from your Atlas of AI recommendation, is there another book that you think everyone should read?
Yes, I have another one. And on the topic of being a creative person and also creating things, not only as your job, but also as your side project, I've been reading Art and Fear lately. It's a book by David Bayos and Ted Orland, and it's all about these fears that we have when we're creating something, and it's all talked about in a very inclusive way, in a very relatable way, and I've been finding a lot of solace in reading about this and understanding that there are so many other people struggling with that as well, and I can really recommend it. It's a very thin one, a very easy read, but very helpful to, yeah, try to tackle the fears that you have around creativity and also around creating art.
Nelly, I feel like you've got a lot of really good recommendations today. I appreciate it. What about yourself? Where can people support you, find you? Do you have an RSS feed for your own blog yet? Like,
I'm working on the blog. Not yet. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter, and you can also find me on Instagram, where I share some of my ceramics that I've been doing, if you're interested in that as well. I think I'm called Nelly Tumatelli on both places.
Great. We will link that. I'm excited to see your ceramic work, especially. Are you using threads that just launched in the EU this week?
No. Feeling very critical about that as well.
Yeah, same. It's a weird space, having come from using Twitter for so long. Well, we will link to all your stuff, and hopefully we see your RSS feed soon, because I'm going to check that out for Feedly, and hopefully other people in the audience can submit their RSS feeds if they're doing
yes,
that
please.
As well. Nelly, thanks so much for being on Bezier. It was great chatting with you. Is there anything else you'd like to share or send us off with?
Thanks a lot for having me. It's been so fun talking to you about all of these things that have been happening. And I feel like maybe a parting thought also now that we're wrapping up 1 year where so much things has happened in the tech industry and the design industry as well. It's a reminder that I try to keep for myself and also try to remind others as well, is that trying not to put all of your sense of identity and value in your work now that our work is changing so much so rapidly. And yeah, trying to find some time to do things on the side that are just for ourselves and for our own enjoyment. And yeah, maybe trying something new and something you're not so good at yet and see where it takes you. So I think this is helpful.